Get an hour-long Flashpoints coming up next on KBOO. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support for community radio. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the other September 11th. Film screening and discussion about the lasting impacts of the U.S.-funded military coup in Chile on September 11, 1973. The event will take place on Friday, September 11th at 7 p.m. at the Fifth Avenue Cinema in Portland. This film screening will include two 30-minute documentaries that focus on Mapuche land reclamation and language revitalization, as well as a discussion with the filmmaker about the specific laws that have been used to target the indigenous Mapuche people since the dictatorship began in 1973. Again, that's the other September 11th, on Friday, September 11th, at 7 p.m. at Fifth Avenue Cinema, 510 Southwest Hall Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Flashpoints, a special report on the current migrant crisis in Hungary. Crisis. Also, a preview of the 2015 Soil Not Oil International Conference that's about practicing sustainable agriculture to restore ecosystems and mitigate climate warming. And Harvey Wasserman on Obama's trip to Alaska and the possibility of renewables. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We turn our attention to a situation that you'd probably have to be in a spaceship or dead not to know about that. And this is the refugee crisis all over Europe. Today we're going to focus on Hungary. We have Deborah S. Rogers. Dr. Rogers is the president of the Initiative for Equality. She is actually just back from the region, and she's got a lot to say about what is going on in Hungary. First of all, give us a sense of what brought you there.
So Initiative for Equality works through local partners in about 90 countries around the world to reduce social, economic, and political inequalities. And of course, migration is closely tied to this. I was actually invited to speak at some international meetings on the subject of corruption and abuse of power. So it was kind of a coincidence that I was there just as this migration issue
was erupting. You just happened to be there.
Yeah. It's good luck or bad luck as you want to look at it.
And so you're there. How did you get involved? Is it a matter of impossible not to get involved? What drew you in?
Well, as it so happens, I entered Budapest through Keleti train station, and this is really ground zero in the current refugee crisis. Refugees, you know, were coming across the Mediterranean Sea in very large numbers and having a terrible, terrible time. So many boats were swamping and people were dying. They were drowning. There wasn't appropriate support for them and so forth. So after a while, people started coming across an overland route. They were coming up through the Balkan states and through Serbia, and therefore Hungary was the first place that they would arrive in the EU, and this is where they were getting stopped.
All right, let me jump in there now and ask you to tell us a little bit about what you saw. Tell us through your senses what you heard, what you saw, what was going on there. Give us a real sense of it.
Yeah, absolutely. When I came into the Keleti train station myself, I realized right away that there was an explosive situation. The entire train station, and especially the underground hallways between the train station and the metro, the subway, which was down beneath it, were completely packed with refugee families. You know, probably I estimate about 2,000 people were there. I've seen estimates on Al Jazeera as high as 3,000. So all the hallways were filled with families, people sleeping and living in those halls, and they were basically trapped there. People were trying to live. They were trying to have some modicum of privacy. They were trying to keep clean. I saw laundry hanging on the rails outside, on the railings outside.
In and outside the train station.
Yes, it's a really huge complex of a train station and a metro station together. And it has very extensive hallways down underground. And then it has both a sunken plaza that's partially shielded from the weather and then an outdoor plaza that's really open and in the blazing sun. It was very, very hot there. So people were just trying to survive. And I found out that this situation had been building since the middle of June. So people had been there as much as 6 or 8 or even 10
living
weeks.
Living there in this station.
Trying to survive. Without food, without water, without any way to survive. And so they were just dependent on the goodwill of people to bring them things.
And now bring us up to date. In the last couple of days, what's been going on? This is what you saw when you came in. What do you know about what's going on right now?
Right. So in the last few days, a lot of things have really changed. And people had been held there for a long time. They were essentially trapped by the EU policies that Hungary was at least partially trying to implement. And so they weren't being allowed to go anywhere. Where they really are trying to go, most of them, is Germany. And they were hoping to hop on a train. They had tickets. They had purchased tickets to take trains across Austria up into Germany.
How long a ride is that?
It's not too long. It would be probably, I don't know, eight hours or something like that. It's not that far. Yeah. Europe is all the countries are pretty close there. But what happened was that people were trapped. They were demanding to go to Germany. And suddenly, on Monday, actually, while I was flying back to the United States, on Monday, the Hungarian authorities allowed all the people in the train station, the people inside the station, which is upstairs, to board trains. And so all of a sudden, the entire train station itself cleared out, and people were elated. They thought, okay, finally, they're letting us go. So everyone was very excited. They allowed them to take the trains and, crammed full in those trains all day Monday, and then they shut it off. And it turned out that they were just letting them go on these trains in order to clear the station. And once the station was cleared of all the migrants, then they shut the doors of the station, and they would not let any migrants in. So they engaged in profiling.
So there were trains to nowhere.
So, well, the people who were lucky enough to get on the trains during that little 12-hour window made it to Germany, but the rest of the people were then completely trapped, and they realized then that they were not going to be let out of there. So all the people down underground and all the people out on the plazas in the blazing hot sun are trapped, and they're still there. So this was almost a kind of a psychological mind game that was played at the same time, just to clear the hallway of the station itself.
All right, so that sort of begins to paint us a picture of the official and the government reaction. So let's step back a moment and talk a little bit about how this was unfolding and what the government, what has been the official response.
Right, so it's been fairly confused. So this influx of refugees was predicted as early as last spring, but the response of the Hungarian government, instead of preparing for it, was to foster the flames of a big backlash against the migrants. And they did this through a poster campaign. They had posters all over the cities in Hungary, giving people messages, very simple messages, that the people who are going to come are simply looking for a free lunch. They're economic migrants. They just want to come and take Hungarian jobs. And also that they are Muslims who are going to come and threaten to overwhelm Hungarian culture. So they sent a really bad message. And the reason that they did this is because the ruling party, which is called Fidesz, was slipping in popularity. They're very right wing, and some people call Viktor Orban, the prime minister, a fascist. So they wanted to appeal to their base of support, which is kind of through right wing xenophobic elements in Hungarian society. And it actually worked for them.
This is the ruling party.
Yes, this is the ruling party, but they were slipping in the polls, and so they wanted to get their supporters all whipped up into a frenzy. So by the time the refugees arrived, they didn't have a chance. Everybody was already primed to hate them and to say that they were not refugees. They had no right to be there. They were just looking to take Hungarian jobs, which, of course, is not true.
All right, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're talking about the very serious refugee situation in Hungary. Obviously, it's all over Europe, and we're seeing this in many forms. But it is very good. We have in the studio Dr. Deborah Rogers. She works with the Initiative for Equality. She just happened to be in the country, in Budapest, as this situation was unfolding. So let's talk a little, maybe we can even step back just a little bit more and talk about the context that it comes up in, the economic context. What is, obviously, if the ruling party can play tough here, there are a lot of people who are vulnerable who can be used easily based on fears, economic fears.
Exactly. And it goes even deeper than that. You know, Hungary is one of those countries in Eastern Europe that has been invaded and conquered many times throughout history. So it sees itself, there's kind of a national identity, as victims of outsiders. So it really is easy to whip up fear and loathing when lots of outsiders start to arrive. And people are desperate to protect their culture against invasion. It's also one of the poorest nations in the EU. It's one of the Eastern European post-Soviet transition economies. It has not been doing well. And already in Hungary, about 400,000 people out of a total of 10 million population are migrants themselves, economic migrants who have moved across, who have relocated in different parts of the EU, primarily Britain. London is the second largest Hungarian city after Budapest.
London.
There's 300,000 Hungarians in London right now.
And so how is the government doing now that they've been managed to bolster themselves using this issue? Because it's not an issue that you can use for a long time. It's got to backfire.
Well, they're trying to drag it out. The last thing that they did was to announce that they were going to build a wall. I guess they're looking at the United States as their role model. So they're going to build a wall on their southern border, which is with Serbia. And, of course, they don't really have the funding or the infrastructure to do this. So what they have done in the meanwhile is to roll out what they call NATO wire, which is big rolls of razor wire. You've probably seen it on
Unlikely name, concertina wire.
Right, concertina. Well, over there they call it NATO wire. You've probably seen it in films about World War II. So a lot of these refugees are showing up with razor cuts on their bodies.
Oh, yeah, that stuff is absolutely brutal. It's used in prisons everywhere.
Exactly.
As well.
Exactly.
What about, now, you talked about sort of a negative response by civil society. Has there been an outpouring of concern? Is there a group of people who have stepped forward?
Absolutely. There has been a beautiful response by at least one segment of civil society. There are a couple of groups. One of them is called MIGSOL, and the other one is Migration Aid, that have formed to help the refugees. They take donations over Facebook and so forth. They bring food and sanitary items and distribute them there at Keleti train station and in some of the other camps. They help with language translation. You know, they have people who can speak some of the different languages, Arabic and Urdu. Most of these refugees, by the way, are coming from Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, so they're people, Pakistan, people who have already been involved in just terrible conflicts. They've already been brutalized and traumatized, so this is the last thing they need is to be treated.
And we have to say, in the aftermath of pathetic and vicious and misguided U.S. policy.
Exactly.
Where they want different resources for a different purpose.
Yeah. But
this is the aftermath here.
Yeah. But anyway, the civil society that has been welcoming in Hungary, yes, and actually all over Europe there have been these efforts, are really beautiful. And when there have been deaths of people, for example, you've probably heard about this truck that they found in Austria. Yeah. It was a chicken truck with 70 or 71 dead people in it. Those people were there because Viktor Orban didn't let them take the train from Hungary to Germany. And so they went and took a truck instead. So those people had only recently been at Keleti station.
Wow.
And so
that's confirmed? those people.
There's no other place they could have been. It's clearly the truck was going from
so they
Budapest.
Forced them out. It's like hammer and anvil.
Yeah. Well, they trapped them, and the people escaped on the on this truck since they couldn't escape on the train.
And anyway, so the civil society was easily vulnerable.
Exactly. I mean, they didn't have options.
Yeah.
They couldn't go back. They couldn't go forward. They were trapped. So they took this truck, and the civil society groups in Budapest had a big, very beautiful candlelight ceremony to, you know, mourn the deaths of these people who only recently had been there. So it's very beautiful. But the strongest position that the groups in Hungary and other parts of Europe are taking is to, in opposition to what they call Fortress Europe. You know, the problems are created by the U.S. and its allies in Europe, the conflicts and the economic dislocation, and then Europe pulls up the drawbridge and creates a fortress and says, no, we don't want you here.
All right. Now, obviously, you're leading us to the larger situation and what's been happening around Europe. Let me tell people again, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're talking about a very desperate situation playing out now in Budapest, Hungary, and in many other parts of Europe. And it's reverberating everywhere. Well, let's talk about what's going on in the rest of the Europe. We see on the one hand, I mean, one would have had to expect or still can expect if the, for instance, if the World Bank and these kind of policies impose themselves, you know, if they had full rein and they had gotten their way in Greece fully, maybe there'd be a couple of million more, a couple hundred thousand more refugees running here or there or everywhere. This really is a squeezing. And we're back to sort of the 1%. And the 99%, and this is the aftermath. What is the bigger picture?
Yeah, so let me first of all just talk about Europe itself and then the world, and because I want to kind of focus in on Europe and then put that in the larger context. So this is the biggest refugee crisis since World War II. So let no one mistake that this is a really tremendously big thing. Already this year, there are at least 400,000 refugees that have entered Europe, and there's predictions that it's going to be up to 1 million or even 1.5 million refugees by the end of 2015. So they're coming